Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I'm excited to be with you today. We are joined today by Amy McCary and Kay Curley. Our topic today is talking about the importance of healthy teams in organizations and how those healthy teams create great cultures. Welcome, Amy, and welcome, Kate.
Thank you.
How are you?
Good. Kate, I'll start with you. Before we get started, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background and the perspective you bring to our conversation today?
Perfect. So, Kate Curley, I am the program manager for teaming and recruiting at the MassMutual Home Office. I've been with the company for about 20 years. I have a long-standing experience with working with firms such as Tim's and really helping them provide some clarity around team formation and development.
Thanks. It's great to have you with us, Kate, in this capacity for all the work we've done. And thank you again for all the help you've given us over the years. So, Amy, as a part of the MassMutual Carolinas family here, why don't you talk a little bit about your background and role?
Absolutely. I was just thinking about this. I've been here with the firm for 3.5 years, so it seems like it flew by for sure.
It did fly by.
Yes. Prior to that, I was in community banking here locally in Charlotte, and because it was a community bank, I had the opportunity, I think, to wear many hats. So while at that bank, oversaw a lot of our leadership development, human resources, as well as just other aspects of, you know, running a business, enterprise risk management, marketing. So I really, really enjoy working with our teams because it kind of reminds me of starting, you know, a business myself and then really through its entire life cycle. So I'm happy to be here. And Tim let me have this job, which I can't wait to get out of bed every morning to come do. So thanks, Tim, for that.
Wow. You're very welcome. And you do a great job. So really the focus of this episode is, like I mentioned, talking about the whys and hows of forming and building healthy and sustainable teams. I know part of the context of our conversation is going to be around, you know, the financial services advisors coming together in teams, but we'll touch on, you know, really partnerships in general, since our audience is entrepreneurs and business owners. So I'll ask this question to both of you, and maybe I'll go in alphabetical order, Amy, let you start, but, you know, what are the elements of a healthy and positive culture inside of a working team or a advisor team?
You know, I kind of went with the big feelings things, but I think they're so important, those soft things that we don't talk about often. You know, trust, you know, having a healthy team requires just such a huge level of trust, you know, candidness, and really knowing each other and knowing yourself, right? So knowing each other's strengths and how to like really utilize those to for the greater good. And really, most importantly, I think that, you know, to have a team with a good culture is to have that shared vision and shared values. Everything else you can work through and work on. But I think it is a hard sell if you don't have a team with shared values and shared vision. So I'd say that's, you know, for me, some of the most important foundational things to look for in creating a team.
And Kate, again, having worked with a number of teams over a long period of time, I mean, what do you see as those elements?
First of all, totally agree with Amy. And I think some of the other things that you tend to see in high-performing teams are a clearly defined team structure. So everybody knows what their role is and what their responsibilities are. They have documented business processes, so they're able to kind of scale up some of the activities they're doing. And Amy touched on these productive team behaviors. And, you know, if you have an opportunity to read Patrick Lencioni's book, The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, that really is applicable to any industry, any business owner. And that really goes into some of those productive team behaviors that are critical for team productivity and ultimately the degree to which a team can succeed against their competitors. Amy mentioned trust. That's definitely the foundation. Teams, you know, must also be able to master productive conflict and have those good, healthy conversations. Achieving commitment from team members, embracing accountability, and then focusing on shared rather than individual results. That, in, you know, my opinion, is summed up nicely in that book and is really the recipe for a healthy, efficient team with a good culture.
Yeah, the ability to have the hard conversations is so critically important. and unfortunately so easily avoided. And it certainly cannot happen in the absence of trust. You've got to have that foundation, and see it all too often, unfortunately. And I think as you study, you know, very successful teams, really in any endeavor, that is the one common theme, is a high level of trust. That doesn't necessarily mean they like each other, even in some instances, but they trust one another explicitly and implicitly with the mission. Kate, next question, really I'll direct it to you, which is, you know, I mean, why, if I'm a business owner, why do I even think the formation of either a partnership or a team would be necessary in my business? And certainly, you know, knowing you work with financial advisors, if you want to take the conversation in that, please do.
Sure. And I think really this is really applicable in almost any industry. But what I see in the financial services industry most often is that teaming typically occurs for one of two reasons, either a capacity issue or a complementary skill set issue. So from a capacity perspective, you know, a business owner will start to hit a plateau when they have too many clients to service and not enough time to see them all. This can also occur when that owner wants to start slowing down. Maybe they want to find a successor or a buyer for their business. Another popular catalyst for teaming, as I mentioned, is that need for a complementary skill set. You know, in the financial services industry, it's constantly evolving and is becoming increasingly more complex. And as a result, the best way to manage that is to team up with someone who has different skill sets or a different area of expertise. And doing that really allows those advisors to play to their strengths while offering more holistic services to their clients. And it really is a win-win for all parties involved.
How does one, in your mind, get to a place, Kate, where, you know, it might not be readily apparent that they need this? I mean, what are some of the catalysts, if you will, for those conversations to start and or for someone to move down this path?
I think, you know, anytime you have, you're faced with something that has maybe gone wrong from a client experience, that right there is oftentimes a key tell as far as you either didn't have the capacity to handle that issue or be proactive around that, or there's something more there. The client is looking for something that maybe you can't offer. So as a team coach, you know, to be able to have those conversations and get someone to think more critically about how this situation could have been handled differently is sometimes a good eye opener in terms of making that realization of, you know, maybe I do need somebody to start partnering with.
Okay. And Amy, I'm going to take you, let you kind of take this question, because there's, you know, there's the flip side of this, which is, just because you have a capacity issue or a skill set issue doesn't mean you should run out and form a team or a partnership.
Yeah, 100%. That's, you know, I have probably more conversations, and I know this is counterintuitive to my job title, but, you know, sometimes you have a conversation, you're like, maybe it's not the right time for you. Either it's not the right time for you. You don't have the right plan to really kind of foster the growth that you need, or it's just not the right person. Right. And so I think, you know, having these conversations early and often is really the best thing that you can do, because it's just as important to determine teaming's right for me as it is to determine it's not the right time for me, or, you know, this isn't the right, you know, partnership for me, or the right structure, if you will. So, I mean, I think as far as a catalyst, you know, each time I run into someone, I'm asking them, you know, what are they, you know, what's going on in their practice, you know, specifically here. And, you know, often they'll talk about joint work partners. I love joint work because I think that's a great way to kind of foray into a dating relationship and really see like what works, what doesn't, things of that nature. So I think it's just as important, you know, and it's not, you're not going to wake up tomorrow and form a team, and they're certainly not going to be high performing. So so I think those baby steps are definitely necessary. And either way, you're getting a positive impact, whatever that answer turns out to be. So
I love to put that out, because teaming is not for everyone. No, you know, no matter what industry we're talking about, there are as many benefits as there are to having that partnership type relationship, there's also a lot of costs. So if you're the type of person who likes full control, you know, that, you know, you don't want to give up some of that decision-making power, that may be a sign or an indicator that that teaming is not right for you. And quite frankly, it's a lot of work to build a team or partnership in the right way. So you have to be able to, you have to have the mindset and the ability to carve out that time.
Yeah, I think in my experience, you know, the formation of a partnership is not all that dissimilar to a marriage. And, you know, I think people look past the work that needs to be done. And then certainly the formation of a team in some respects is not that different than the formation of a family, which is, again, a wonderful thing, but also takes work and has its own set of challenges. And it's unfortunate too often you'll see a business owner, you know, try and either build a partnership with the wrong person and or form a team. And, you know, I think one of the classic mistakes is take a team of very high performing individuals that aren't necessarily built to work together and throw them together and expect, you know, a 1 + 1 + 1 = 5 when you may get 1 + 1 + 1 = 1. So Amy, let's assume though for a moment that we are solving with a successful team or partnership, you know, it's the right path. I mean, what are some of the things that that solves for in your experience?
There, you know, there are so many things I think it could solve for that we would run out of time on this podcast. So I had to really think about this one a lot and filter it down. And ultimately, I think it really just solves for your client experience, right? So forming a team is going to elevate, in some instances, I think, that client experience, either by being able to serve more clients, have a greater impact on your community, being able to offer new perspectives to your current client base, and then just ultimately, you know, your service model, just maybe giving them a little bit more of that white glove that you want to and you just can't get around to. I think that's kind of one of the major issues that, you know, teaming can solve for. And the other thing that I thought about, it's really, you know, to go back to, you said mindset, you know, it's hard as someone who's kind of an individual solo practitioner, if you will, like you're your own cheerleader every day, and people that can do that, you know, it's great. However, it's hard sometimes. And I think when you're on a team, you know, you have that interdependent mindset that allows everyone to kind of lift each other up and keep each other going. Because, you know, things aren't always going to be great. It's not a set it and forget it. You're going to go through your different phases, and you're going to storm and then perform. And then sometimes you're going to go back to storming, you know, if you talk about development. And I think that that's, you know, it's very beneficial or helpful for your mindset. I know personally teams that I've been on, I've needed them often for, you know, just for that little boost. And that's very important and impactful.
Yeah, the importance of sharing the support of the challenges that come along and having somebody to celebrate the successes with is pretty key. So I am fond, Kate, of both reminding myself and those that I work with that success is not nearly as good a teacher as failure. You have been involved working with literally hundreds of teams over your last few years. What have you seen that hasn't gone so well? And what would one want to potentially avoid in exploring a partnership or a teaming endeavor?
That's a great question. And to me, the first thing that jumps to mind is really when teams form for the wrong reasons. And so that can happen in a couple of different ways. You know, two people might just really like each other and they think they're going to make good business partners. So they skip over some of those critical formation elements, such as vision and values alignment, and kind of jump right into it. But just because you have a lot of fun with someone on the golf course doesn't mean you're going to have a lot of fun with someone running a business. So it's really important to make sure you're really identifying the right team member or partner for you. And then another time this happens is because it's compensation motivated. And so, you know, while it's proven that teams, you know, tend to be more productive and generate more revenue, I always tell people that should not be their primary motivator to team up. you really should be solving a bigger problem, such as a capacity issue or the desire to improve the client experience. And then, you know, the compensation and the revenue will come from there. But just, you know, joining forces for that reason is just, it oftentimes doesn't work out that way.
So Kate, I mean, in a practical sense, having worked with people that are in the early stages of exploring a partnership or the development of a team, I mean, you mentioned a few things around vision and mission and core values. I mean, what are some of the practical steps I could take to really try and figure out if I'm entering into a business relationship with someone that, you know, this is a good idea?
Right. I mean, I think right off the bat, the first thing is really having clarity on what it is you're trying to build. So what is your vision? Does that vision resonate with the potential, ideal candidate to team with? Are you on the same page and can you track toward that vision together? Once you have identified that candidate to team with, you really want to sit down and have a values conversation. I've heard stories that, you know, I think people will laugh at, but, you know, if you don't have that values conversation on what is really important to you, what motivates you, there can be a big disconnect right off the bat. And one example that I like to tell people that folks get a chuckle out of is, you know, we had two folks that were looking to join a team. On paper, it looked really great. At the end of the day, what really destroyed them was because one person really liked to get in the office early and, you know, work long hours, and the other person, you know, was a late riser and, you know, didn't shave his beard. And that was like, you know, the beginning of the end. And it seems silly or superficial. It's really important that you're on the same page and the same things drive your motivation. Otherwise, it can be a potential for conflict down the road.
Yeah, and I know, I think we all inherently think we have a good sense of our values, but I know there's some really great exercises out there to help people, you know, both individually and then collectively go through and see where that values alignment takes place, because that does become a really important foundation for building trust.
We start with a tool that has maybe 100 words on it that individually you circle the top 20. That resonate with you as an individual. And then you kind of regroup as a team and share, you know, what resonated. Then you start identifying where there was overlap. Then you start having conversations about what does this word mean to you? Because, you know, family could mean something different to one person than it does to another. And how does that really integrate into the practice or the business that you're building? And so It's an exercise that can take a couple of hours, but if done, you know, executed properly, it really starts to bring some clarity to, you know, the values conversation and brings it to light.
Yeah, you mentioned family. I remember being involved in an exercise like that, and one person's vision of family was working long, hard hours to provide for their family, and the others was to work as least as possible to spend more time with their family. And so family was a value, but how they were feeding that value, you know, clearly was going to create some interesting dynamics in a partnership.
Right. Yeah. And didn't have that conversation to define what that meant. Right up, you could have conflict right off the bat, because that would be a major disconnect in the way those two folks were operating.
Yep. They both cared about their family. They were taking different approaches on how to get there. Amy, I'm going to come back to you. So you're Colby certified, which is a tool you can describe, but how do you use a tool like that to really help match up, you know, beyond this values exercise, vision, mission? Talk about, you know, this is one tool of many, but one you're certified in to use a tool to kind of help make matches.
Sure. Well, you know, and Colby is a little bit different than, you know, a DISC, if you will, because it's not measuring your feelings, your affect. It's really measuring your, you know, cognitive capabilities, which I like to say it's your natural, the natural way you solve problems. So you're pretty much born this way. And there's not, you know, you can know how to utilize it. You can definitely harness it. And it's not much that you can change, though. I'll say you can't really work on it to change, because it's just your natural proclivity. And so a lot of times we'll use Colby, not so much for, you know, like communication, things like that. I think there's, you know, DISC is a much more useful tool in that sense. But I think when you're talking through role alignment and role, even role creation, Colby is really useful there, in a sense where it kind of is going to tell you how someone's going to work, and how they're going to not show up about how they feel about things, but just the natural process that they'll take when solving, you know, solving to problems or striving to solve problems. And so some of the things that we'll utilize for Colby is, you know, we had a conversation, I think just the other day, and it's like, you know, you think that you might want someone who is a clone of you, and that's not necessarily true, right? But you certainly don't want someone who's the complete opposite. And it's okay if you have that, but to the point that we were talking about before, there was conflict right off the bat. You know, Kate talked about this might help you identify where there may be conflict in the future, because you can look at different variances on how people show up and how they work. You know, and some people are very straight to the point. Some people are super strategic and use lots of words. And sometimes you can modify the way that you approach each other. I have a peer that I work with here, for example, that I am very specific and bullet pointed when I communicate with this person. I take it upon myself to do that because I'm a lengthy communicator in general. So it's, you know, just things like that. And oftentimes just going through these assessments and doing the debriefs, especially if you do it at a team level, you have these aha moments, and it just opens up, most importantly, I think it opens up the ability to safely have a conversation that possibly wasn't had before. And just, you know, kind of moves that team light years because they feel, you know, like they're in a safe environment. They understand now why this, you know, certain conflict might be happening, and they're able to talk about it. So that kind of helps that process along as well, I think. So that's really what we'll utilize Colby for mostly. Role alignment, I would say.
Okay. Yeah, and I know it helps kind of align people's strengths and what they'll contribute to the team, and likewise, what kind of disruptions they create on the team.
Right.
As a 9 quick start myself. I'm going to ask you both to tackle this. I'll let you guys decide who to go first with. But, you know, I'm going to speak really to the financial services industry, but I am sure the statistics are not terribly far off for all businesses in this country. But according to Think Advisor, 73% of financial advisors don't have a written succession plan. And among those that do, 72% are focused on the value of their business, while only 57% are focused on transition. So how does someone go about identifying the need for a successor and the gap to solve for?
Kate, I'm going to defer to you on this one because I know this is your expertise area, and I learned so much from you. Why should I speak about it?
Sure. You know, I think just first off, this is a huge challenge in our industry, and it's really not just about those planned exits or retirements, but only 25% of advisors have a continuity plan in place. Death and disability, the number one threat to single owner practices. You know, so there goes the tie back to teaming in a way. You know, continuity and succession planning, you know, as Amy mentioned, have been a huge area of focus for myself in my role. And we've really worked hard to develop a suite of resources to make it easier for advisors to do this type of planning. You know, from a continuity perspective, you really just want to make sure you have an in case of emergency plan. Who's going to serve your clients if something happens to you? You know, we like to tell people, don't let perfection be the enemy of progress. You know, it's just important to get, you know, some type of plan is better than no plan. From a succession perspective, it's a good exercise to start with is a time horizon exercise. And that's really thinking about how many hours a week are you putting into the business today? What do you want to be putting into the business in terms of hours a year from now, 2, 5, 10 years from now? Once you determine where that 30 hour a week mark is, you really need to have a plan in place at that point. And the reality is you really need to start the planning process 5 to 10 years ahead of that point in order to maximize practice value and retain client relationships. So that's critically important.
So once you've, you know, started to identify a person, and, you know, it's hard to say there's a single person, but what are the steps to ensure, you know, this might work out on a long-term basis, Kate?
For purposes of that conversation, I'll focus just on succession, because I mentioned continuity is really the, in case of emergency plan, you can really identify someone who maybe doesn't have the same long-term goals that you do, but can be a good resource in your absence to your clients. From a succession perspective, where you have more control over that exit, you're really grooming someone to take over your practice. You know, you first really need to do some soul searching about your own personal goals. And because that's going to inform your long-term plan for your business and that eventual handoff. Once you have clarity about what it is you want as, you know, the business owner and in your personal life, it's really important that you're transparent with your successor, because that way all parties are on the same page, tracking toward that same vision. You know, as you know, this, I feel like I'm being a dead horse at this point, but value alignment and clearly defined roles and responsibilities during this transition are also very important. When there's ambiguity, the successor can start to lose engagement in the vision. So it's really important that that's clearly defined all the way along. You know, as you're building trust and you feel confident in your chosen successor, you really should start making your plans known to your clients. You know, the more time your clients have getting to know your successor and they see the trust you've instilled in that person, you know, the less likely they are to leave, you know, when the ownership changes hands, and we call that transition risk. So you really want to lower the transition risk as much as possible. And believe it or not, you're going to, you know, your clients are going to be relieved to know that you've done this type of planning, that you've practiced what you've preached, and that you've actually made them a priority as you're thinking about your next chapter. So those are all, and I think those steps can really be applied to any business owner in any industry. It's really important to have clarity about your plan, to communicate throughout the process, and let your clients know. I've actually had some advisors share with me that they've had clients, you know, once they've shared their plans as to what they're thinking for slowing down or retiring, some clients are actually really relieved. And, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, we've been wanting to ask you that, but we didn't know the best way to bring it up. So it actually opens the door for a lot of really good conversations.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tim. I had a follow-up there. If I could jump on to, you know, that, Kate, what you're talking about, what also having those transition conversations very early, you know, maybe 10 years out, it allows you to also like take an in-depth look at your practice and possibly areas that you may need to strategically change. To make your practice, you know, continue to be valuable or even more valuable in the future. And so I think, you know, it's not a last minute waste of time, because I think there's so many good elements that can come out of just really doing that, that due diligence, if you will, when you first start that process. That due diligence can really elevate your practice as well. And I think it's something that, you know, it's not a waste. It's something that's very beneficial and something you should look at annually, in my opinion, as well. We try to do that here.
I totally agree. You know, I see many advisor who was starting to slow down in their practice and starting to do this type of planning has identified a successor, and now they're in full-blown growth mode. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you know, transferring advisor is not going to retire anymore, but they're actually going to retire and hand off something that is bigger and better than what they started, because they did start the process early. So that's really exciting to see that, you know, you can exit the business you've spent a lifetime building and still have it be in growth mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that in talking to business owners, you know, the idea of passing your business on, I mean, for some, quite frankly, it's like, you know, name me a price, I'm out of here. But most business owners have an emotional attachment to the business, the people that are in it. And in a lot of cases, it's become kind of their focus of who they are and their purpose. And so it's a challenge to go through that process. And it ultimately, you know, I think the frame of reference I've shared with a lot of business owners is, you know, at some point, A, you've got to have something beyond this business that gets you excited. And think about, you know, if the true essence of your motivation is you care about the people, the clients, you want to kind of leave a legacy, then take the time to invest in it and take the time to find the right person or persons and invest in them. And you can create a great win and you can kind of go out on top, so to speak, versus again, just, you know, what too many people do in all businesses is it just shuts down, you know, it's over and the game over. And that's really not a business as much as it probably was a job that they were self-employed in, but I think it's good counsel. How much, you know, Kate, I'm curious when you're talking, and again, this could be a partnership or a broader team, but I mean, how much time do you counsel people to devote to dealing with whether it's dynamics in a team, integration, you know, these more strategic topics?
I think it's really important to spend a lot of time upfront, you know, educating folks on team dynamics. Because especially if you're in a coaching role, so I know Amy's role, you know, in coaching teams at your firm, for example, unlike that one-on-one coaching, team coaches really need to have a good understanding of team dynamics, because understanding the foundations of those dynamics will enable that coach to recognize the current state of each team and allow them to meet them where they're at. You know, it's also really important that teams understand these components and how it relates to their development, because, you know, as we've said time and time again, teaming is an evolution. There can be bumps along the way, and it really helps teams to know that this is normal and even expected. So spending that upfront time educating people on, you know, that, as I think Amy referenced it earlier, you know, forming, storming, norming, performing, you know, that's one aspect of team dynamics. That's really crucial, because I think some people could get frustrated early on in the process, wondering, you know, what's going on here? Maybe I made the wrong decision, but, you know, there's growing pains, and that's got to be expected.
Yes, it's not going to be clean nor linear. What advice, kind of wrapping up, do you guys have for entrepreneurs listening to this podcast that relates to building a team or entering a partnership that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, I'll start with, I think the first thing that you should probably do is a lot of self-reflection, because I think if you're going to lead a team, ultimately you're going to need a high level of self-awareness. You're going to have to have a high level of emotional intelligence. And I think, you know, when you're thinking, well, should I start a team? What, you know, what's the right next step? Really start thinking about what you're not good at or what you should stop doing, right? Everyone kind of goes, well, here's what I can do. Here's the lift it'll get me. But I think it's just as important to say, here's where I have a gap that I can fill. And I think, you know, having that level of humility and self-awareness is just kind of a good first step to what you're going to experience as a leader and as you form a team anyhow. And so that would be my advice, is kind of really look reflectively inside and kind of look at, you know, areas that you shouldn't be doing or you're not that great at, and start building your team out from there. That's how I would approach it.
I love that. And that, you know, I would also add to that, you know, regardless of the industry, there's people who have forged the path ahead of you. So learn from them. You know, I've seen so many entrepreneurs try to figure it out on their own. In our world, you know, at Mass Mutual, from a teaming perspective and working with advisors, we have a proven process to form and develop healthy advisor teams. And it was really created by leveraging not only industry research, but some of the best practices that we've learned by working with hundreds of teams. I think also leveraging the assistance of a coach is well worth the investment. If you're lucky enough to be part of a firm like Mass Mutual Carolinas, you have a great resource in Amy. I think regardless of the industry, research has shown and proven that team design and structure accounts for 60% of team performance. This tells us that coaching during that formation process or formation phase is critical. you know, forming teams for the right reasons with the right people is hard work, but going through that process with the guidance of a coach will help ensure long-term sustainability and, you know, quite frankly, provide that third party, you know, unbiased guidance and push that sometimes you need to think a little bit bigger.
Kate and Amy, thank you very much for joining us today on Winning Through Culture. Kate, it's great to have you as a guest, having supported our organization and the many teams in our firm here for, I guess, a decade almost now. But really appreciate your insights and experience shared with us today, both as it applies to whether it's a financial services team or a business partnership. Amy, great to have you on the podcast as well today. And again, I appreciate you stepping into this new role. I guess it was late last year now, or I'm losing track of the days in COVID time as we come out of the COVID fog. But it's great to see the impact you're having in the organization locally here. And again, it's a topic that is definitely worthy of spending more time on if you're a business owner, entrepreneur, or financial advisor. There are tons of resources out there. You know, we talked a little bit today about books, Patrick Lencioni, but there are tons of resources. And really, I know from my own experience, and certainly as you both have articulated today, that done right, and again, it's not always easy, done right, a really high performing team can create a great experience, not only for the clients and people it serves, but for those people that are a part of it. And it can give everyone an opportunity to grow and to improve in their professional life and allow them to really focus in on the areas where they're most gifted and their strengths are really strong and make a contribution in a meaningful way. So it certainly in my mind beats the solopreneur model, and certainly in a world that's getting more complex, a team that's functioning well is probably going to win on a more frequent basis. So thanks for sharing your insights today. Thanks for being with us on another episode of Winning Through Culture. And until we are with you again, make it a great day.